Talk 1370, the right choice for weekends.
Previously,
and we also were hooked up with all this social media that my kids tell me is so cool. You know, the Facebook and Twitter.
Facebook.
Thank you. And I'm not sure that I really understand all the value of Facebook and Twitter, except that I can find all my high school buddies I hadn't seen in years. But anyway, so you can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter.
This is Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
This is Dr. Natalie Berger from Texas Fertility Center. We're happy and excited to bring you another edition of Beyond the Birds and Bees. And we are live on Talk Radio 1370. So for you guys and gals who are listening and have an interest in calling us with any questions today, the number is 390-1370. You can always still follow us on talk1370.com. So today on this gorgeous Saturday, I have the pleasure of having a special guest with me. And Dr. Herb Singh from Urology Austin is with us, and he is a urologist with a special interest in the field of male infertility as well as microsurgery and male reproductive endocrinology. And we are going to be talking to you guys about issues with your plumbing today. So from my standpoint, what I'm referring to is not a clogged drain or anything, but actually women who have had tubal ligations and are interested in pursuing fertility afterward. And Dr. Singh is going to be talking about men who have undergone previous vasectomy and are interested in pursuing pregnancy again with their partner and what kind of options they have. So before we go further, I wanted to formally introduce Dr. Singh. He trained in urology at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, following medical school at University of Pennsylvania, following actually college, where we both went to, we realized a few days ago. So we both actually ended up living in the same dorm for 3 years and didn't know it until a few days ago at college. We both were at MIT in the mid-90s.
That goes to show you how hard we studied. We were probably only about 50 feet apart, but we don't recall seeing each other at any point.
Unfortunately, that says a lot about the whole social atmosphere at MIT. However, we have made it this far, and we now are more social and are reaching out. But again, Dr. Herb Singh, again, went to MIT for college, medical school at University of Pennsylvania, trained in urology at Baylor in Houston, and you actually had some interesting experience with one of the urologists there who's pretty well known in male infertility.
Yes, I trained with Dr. Larry Lipschultz, and he is actually one of the founders of male infertility. It's a field that's fairly new, about 30, 40 years old. And as he was training, he was developing the field. And I trained with him at Houston at Baylor.
That's really exciting because Dr. Lipschultz is one of maybe a couple of the best known urologists in the United States. So to have that opportunity to train with him is pretty impressive. And certainly we hear a lot about him.
Absolutely. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah. And in terms of the group that you're with currently, which is Urology Austin, you're actually a multi-place group. You have multiple offices in the Austin area. It sounds like five major ones.
Yeah, five major ones. We have 18 physicians, pathologists, radiation oncologists. So our group tries to deliver all aspects of urologic care.
Mm-hmm. And you yourself have a special interest in male infertility. And I'm wondering actually how it is that you came to that as an interest. Is that something that you had in even training in urology or even before that? Or how did that
come out? It's interesting. When I was at MIT, we had the opportunity to work and I did electrical engineering and computer science, but we got to make little circuit boards. And my favorite part was working with those little tiny circuit boards. And as I started urology training, a lot of urology is very diverse, but there's a lot of removal of large organs or not that it's not refined, but you're not working with very small things, moving very small things or putting very small things together. It's more like, let's get this out, let's do that. And male infertility, the surgical aspects of it involve a great deal of precision and appreciation to detail, and it really appealed to me. And so that's why I initially sparked my interest in it and and I, the more I learned about it, the more I enjoyed it.
Gotcha. Now, it's exciting. It certainly, you know, we have a lot of patients who the couples where he is having some issues in terms of sperm stuff or otherwise. So certainly we've sent a lot of patients, you know, your direction and are very grateful for your very comprehensive care of them. And, you know, today we're going to be talking about not only, again, fallopian tube problems, but also his plumbing problems as well, too. What I wanted to talk about briefly is just talking on the woman's side of things, fallopian tube issues. We know that technically after someone has had their, quote, tubes tied, which literally when someone has their fallopian tubes tied, it's actually they're not tying their tubes. There are a few different procedures to interrupt fallopian tubes to help prevent against pregnancy. But if someone has had that performed and has decided that they want to pursue pregnancy down the road, whether it be because they have a new partner or maybe some time has passed and they've realized that they want to expand their family further, we know there technically are a couple of options. And, you know, referring to sort of the theme of the day, which is the reversal of these surgical procedures, we do realize there are technically two options for someone who's had a tubal ligation before. And technically, those options would be either reversing the original surgery or considering a fertility procedure that does not require fallopian tubes. And that procedure is IVF. And we know that, you know, a lot of folks will want to have a discussion with their provider before they make a decision like this, because certainly there can be different reasons why couples may be better suited to consider a fallopian tube reversal procedure versus pursuing IVF. And in terms of the tubal reversal procedure, there are some reasons why people might be better selected for the tubal reversal. This is actually a surgical procedure that, again, puts back together the open fallopian tube parts so that egg and sperm can meet. We know that it can be performed with a incision, much like a small C-section incision, or in some cases might be considered laparoscopically. But it is a surgical procedure. Some folks who might be better suited for this kind of procedure may be folks who say, gosh, we're interested in having maybe multiple more kids. For us, doing the one surgical procedure to fix the fallopian tubes may allow us to proceed with having multiple kids down the road. And so we wouldn't want to pursue IVF where it may not give us quite as many options for multiple kids. We'd have to undergo the procedure multiple times potentially. Another reason why people might be considering a fallopian tube reversal would be if they had any kind of religious or philosophical reasons why in vitro fertilization or IVF may not be ideal for them. And then technically, if people are younger and feel like they have a longer period of time to try for pregnancy, they may consider a tubal reversal procedure. It's true, though, that most couples who come to see us, once they hear the pros and cons about tubal reversal versus IVF, most tend to lean towards in vitro fertilization or IVF rather than undergoing a more involved surgical procedure with more anesthesia.
Natalie, what's the success rate of a tubal reversal?
That's a good question. It really does depend upon what the type of tube ligation in the past, how it was done, also the age of the patient. We know that the more fallopian tube that is destroyed or damaged during the original procedure, the lower the chance that the subsequent procedure to try to repair the fallopian tube is going to be successful. Another really important thing to take in consideration is, what is the woman's age? Even if someone has had easy, breezy time to pregnancy before, you know, let's say they had five kids and had tubal ligation 9 years ago and are now 40 and, you know, feel like, gosh, I've had pregnancies come very easily. All I need to do is reverse my fallopian tube ligation and it shouldn't be an issue. Well, unfortunately, no matter what, we know that over time, women's fertility does go down. And so we have to be very aware of this as we're discussing the possibility of reversing somebody's tubal ligation. We know that one study overall suggested maybe about a 50 to 70% chance of pregnancy ultimately after a tubal reversal, but it does significantly depend upon, again, the original type of procedure, how old the woman is, and also if there are additional problems. If, for instance, someone has a new partner and he has not been checked out, well, we need to make sure that there are no issues with him before we proceed along a surgical procedure to reverse the fallopian tubes. And we know that on the plus side of tubal reversals, the chances of multiple pregnancies is not any higher than a spontaneous rate, because all we're doing is putting fallopian tubes back together. So for people who have a very strong desire to try to prevent multiple pregnancies, meaning twins or more, then a tubal ligation reversal may make some sense to them. We know that expense-wise, tubal ligation reversal is typically not covered by insurance, but occasionally it can be. And depending upon this, this may also increase the desire for a couple to undergo reversal if it's covered versus IVF if it's not covered. But we know that if they're paying out of pocket, tubal reversal may cost sometimes around $10,000, $12,000. So compared to IVF, it's not so much cheaper that it makes economic sense from a for everybody, you know, when you're comparing those two procedures. And it's really important, as I had mentioned before, that if we are fixing the fallopian tubes, we need to absolutely make sure that there are no other big factors before we decide to do a big procedure. And things that we'd want to check typically are a sperm count for him, possibly some hormonal testing for her, just to make sure that the female partner has reasonable fertility and that there's not any kind of large impediment to pursuing pregnancy after the fallopian tubes are repaired. And also we want to make sure the inside of the uterus is normal as well too, because if there is something to fix beforehand, we want to do that possibly at the same time as we're doing the tubal reversal procedure. So in a nutshell, women who have had a tubal ligation potentially have two possible options for treatment, one being a tubal ligation reversal, another being IVF. And it really warrants a in-depth discussion with your provider to determine what the best treatment is, though a lot of times IVF ends up being the most the best option for a lot of couples. So what we're going to do in the next segment is we're going to segue into issues with men who've had vasectomies and what kind of options they have for pursuing fertility afterward. Again, this is Dr. Natalie Berger. I'm here with Dr. Herb Singh, and feel free to give us a call at 390-1370.
Talk 1370, the right choice for weekends. Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Dr. Natalie Berger again with Beyond the Birds and Bees. Again, I'm here with Dr. Herb Singh, a urologist with Urology Austin, who has a special interest and training in the field of male fertility, as well as microsurgery and male reproductive endocrinology. Again, we're talking today about plumbing problems. So we talked a little bit in the first segment about options for women who've had fallopian tube ligations, meaning their tubes are tied, and who are considering or wanting pregnancy again. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the other side. For instance, men who have had vasectomies who are interested in pursuing pregnancy again with their partner. So basically, first of all, you know, who is a candidate for a vasectomy reversal, Herb?
The key is making sure the person's had a vasectomy. I guess that goes without saying. But the other factors that are critical, and the most fundamental critical factor is that the partner. So if there's any possibility of female factor infertility, that needs to be fully evaluated, because in our procedure, our objective is very singular, and that is to allow for the ejaculation of as many sperm that are healthy as possible. But that doesn't achieve a pregnancy. So the wife's fertility issues need to be evaluated before moving forward with the vasectomy reversal.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, again, from our perspective as well, too, is it takes two in this process. And so we cannot just ignore one partner to focus on the other. So it really is important for us to be in this together and to look at both the male and the female partners. Now, realizing that, you know, someone's had a vasectomy and they're contemplating the idea of a vasectomy reversal, are there possibly alternatives?
Absolutely. So if indeed there are significant female fertility issues, There may be a role for moving forward with a sperm harvesting procedure rather than a vasectomy reversal, and moving forward with ICSI with in vitro fertilization. That is a very good option, because then you eliminate some of the issues in terms of getting to pregnancy. And there are several options from to harvest sperm for somebody who has an obstruction at some point in their sperm duct, as would be the case with a vasectomy. What we do is we try to harvest sperm as distal, meaning as far removed from the original sperm development process, so they're as mature as possible and likely to be achieve a pregnancy as much as possible. And that's in the area of the testicle called the epididymis. And the procedure is called a MESA, which is short for a microscopic epididymal sperm aspiration.
Gotcha. And so MESA is one option. And technically, could there be another kind of procedure done as an alternative to MESA, like in some cases?
Sure. There are other procedures where you can aspirate sperm directly from the testicle. The MESA tends to result in the greatest quantity and number of sperm, so it allows for more cycles potentially. But yeah, there's other techniques to aspirate sperm outside of the operating room. There are various pros and cons of the various techniques, and some people usually settle on one method of harvesting sperm as the choice of to move forward with.
Gotcha. So in this kind of case, we're not putting the tube back together again. Basically, we are removing sperm from a higher up position and then using it in conjunction with the fertility treatment, in vitro fertilization or IVF. Now, in terms of if someone is saying, gosh, I really, you know, would consider the vasectomy reversal as the better option, like, what do you think would be some scenarios where the reversal itself may make more sense rather than doing aspiration of sperm higher up?
Oh, so if there's the intent for multiple children down the road, if the female partner is young and has many reproductive years ahead, a reversal makes sense. Also, reversals make sense. You know, they can make sense at any point if you just look at the issue of how long it's been since there's been a vasectomy. Mm-hmm. The vasectomy success rate is higher the smaller the interval from the vasectomy. So generally in the first 5 years after a vasectomy, the success rate can be as high as 98%. Wow. And then it tends to drop off. And at about 15 years, it's about 75 to 80%. And it stays about that.
Mm-hmm. And then if the vasectomy reversal fails, which we basically just talked about the success rate. So in those times where it does not work, what are the options at that point?
So I am very conscious that, you know, even though the numbers are high, 97% or 80, 90%, that, you know, there's still that some degree of possibility it's going to fail. And so I talk with every couple about harvesting sperm. I'd say about 70% of the time, at the time of the vasectomy reversal, we can harvest sperm satisfactorily from the sperm duct that is attached to the testicle side. Mm-hmm. And in that situation, we harvest sperm and we freeze the sperm so that in the unlikely event that it does fail, then they can move forward with that sperm that's been harvested with an IVF procedure.
Gotcha. And if someone has already had a vasectomy reversal fail, would you ever consider trying to do it again surgically?
You know, it's one of those things I would individually counsel patients about. There's certainly success with redo vasectomy reversals. The success rate tends to be lower than on an initial attempt. Mm-hmm. But everybody needs to look at it. And some of the factors that can potentially impact a vasectomy reversal is the length of healthy sperm that you have to work with. Now, clearly, you don't want to have a testicle that you need to, pexy or move and secure at a higher location that makes it uncomfortable for the man. So there's individually, you'd examine the patient, see exactly where the defect appears to be, and counsel them about the likelihood of success and how the ultimate result will be. So that is a possibility. And of course, then you could also at that point move forward with IVF if that's appropriate too.
Gotcha. So realizing the economic times we're in, you know, one big question that comes up is, what is the cost of a vasectomy reversal?
Yeah, generally vasectomy reversals are not covered by insurance. It's very rare that they are. The overall cost tends to be in the $10,000 range, and it varies what part of country you're in. I know that vasectomy reversals in New York City and Manhattan would be double that. And, you know, someplace, Austin, it's a good place to live. It's a good reason to live in Austin because we tend to be about half that.
Gotcha. So if somebody, you know, comes to you for a new patient visit to talk to you about vasectomy reversal, what is the process that they would go through from sort of talking to evaluation to the actual operation and afterward?
Yeah. So what I would do is when a patient comes in, we go over, you know, their history, just like any new patient visit. And I get a sense for if there were any issues with the initial pregnancies, if there have been pregnancies before. I evaluate both the couple. You know, I discuss the female factors, as I mentioned earlier. On the physical exam, I look for exactly where the vasectomy defect appears to be. And my objective during the exam is to make sure the testicles appear healthy by physical examination, and also to be sure that anatomically it looks like the vas can be reconstructed satisfactorily on both sides. And mm-hmm. those are the major preoperative concerns. Postoperatively, I ask people not to engage in ejaculation for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And light activity for that amount of time as well. And then at about 6 to 7 weeks, we get a sperm specimen to see what we have.
Gotcha. And I realize it can take actually even a few months to get back to the optimal or maximum sperm production after a procedure like this. And in terms of side effects or risks of the procedure, what would you say would be common ones that you tell patients about?
Yeah, it's a very safe procedure. I've never had anybody have an infection. That's a possibility, but I would put that at less than 1%. It's not well quantifiable. The sperm duct of the testicle is never, testicular artery is not disturbed during the procedure. Mm-hmm. There's actually 3 supplies of blood to the testicle. So some people have this concern or fear that they could potentially lose a testicle, and that's is extremely
a big fear to have.
Exactly, and it's a legitimate fear, but that's extremely extremely unlikely because the testicle has 3 separate blood supplies, and we don't even come close to 2 of them during the procedure.
Mm-hmm. And is there any effect on sexual function after vasectomy reversal?
No, it doesn't affect a person's testosterone levels or their libido mm-hmm. or their erection quality at all.
And where are vasectomy reversals performed? Are they done in the OR?
Yeah, it's an outpatient procedure. They can be done in a hospital outpatient setting or in a surgery center. I tend to do mine in the surgery center setting unless there's a strong preference for another setting.
Mm-hmm. And anesthesia-wise, is that something that requires general?
Yes, absolutely. It requires general anesthesia and paralysis because we do the procedure under a microscope, and 1 millimeter movements would be very difficult. We're suturing with very small sutures that are smaller than the diameter of a hair. So when we do the procedure, absolute stillness is critical. And so for that reason, we do it under general anesthesia.
Gotcha. And in the terms of the sperm that's ejaculated after vasectomy reversal, is there any difference in that compared to maybe the previous quality?
So my general answer to that would be no. If a person has not ejaculated for a period more than 7 days, and essentially functionally that's what's happened when you've had a vasectomy, there are some qualitative and quantitative differences in the sperm. They can move slower and their shape can be slightly different, but usually that improves in about 6 weeks from the time ejaculation starts. So it's not long-term, there's no difference.
And what we're going to do now is we're going to take a short little break again, and we're going to wrap up in the last segment about some more questions about vas reversals. Again, we're on Talk Radio 1370 AM at 390-1370.
Talk 1370, the right choice for weekends. Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Hello again, this is Natalie Berger, and again I'm here with Dr. Herb Singh from Urology Austin. And we are finishing up a little bit of a discussion about vasectomy reversal issues. And before we left for the break, we were talking about after vasectomy reversal, is there a difference in sperm quality? And discussing that in general, there isn't a large difference, but there can be some differences.
Yeah, and those differences disappear after about 6 weeks after the procedure.
So not anything permanent or longstanding there.
Mm-mm. And a lot of another question people have is, you know, if they're, let's say it's been 6 weeks, they haven't ejaculated a lot, they're concerned their sperm quality is not optimized, is there some benefit to waiting? And I tell everybody there's absolutely no benefit to waiting, because there's such a Darwinian natural selection process that occurs with sperm. Those that ultimately fertilize the egg are ones that we're destined to, because of their good quality, intrinsic qualities. And so that's not a reason to hold off from trying to achieve pregnancy naturally.
So in someone who's had a vasectomy reversal and who's interested in sort of optimizing their sperm count and numbers in general, what are some recommendations that you give sort of in general, you know, beyond just the putting the tubes back together to help them achieve the maximum sperm count?
That's a very good question. And in many ways, that could be a 2-3 hour discussion by itself. It goes from, you can start from diet, lifestyle. So let's just cover some of the majors. In terms of lifestyle, being your ideal body weight helps, and there's hormonal reasons for that. The fatty tissue tends in men to convert male hormone into female hormone, and that has a negative impact on sperm quality and actually also on male hormone levels. Mm-hmm. Another lifestyle is smoking. So smoking is not healthy for sperm. It's not clear how much of a negative impact it is, but there certainly seems to be an impact on the motility and some other sperm characteristics. In terms of marijuana smoking, same issue. The other issue in terms of lifestyle is alcohol intake. Now, many people are social drinkers, and the amount of alcohol, people that are more than two alcoholic beverages a day, it appears to have a negative impact on sperm quality. And it's unclear going between two alcoholic beverages to zero whether there's an improvement. So I always counsel my patients, because this tends to be a very common question, is that as long as you can limit yourself to less than two alcoholic beverages a day, then I don't think it's having a significant negative impact.
And that's typically what we say as well, too. And some folks say, well, I don't drink Monday through Friday, but I'll have my six-pack on Saturday or so. And that unfortunately does not coincide with the recommendation, which is to limit it to two or fewer drinks a day. Or
exactly.
So. Even if you are abstaining for 6 of the 7 days.
It's, you can't bank your...
No, storing up there. And in terms of supplements, because realizing that Austin's a very progressive town, and it's very common to have individuals who are finding nutritional supplements like at the local store or in ads or magazines and such. Do you have any recommendations regarding any particular nutritional or herbal supplements for optimizing sperm count?
There's three things I would recommend to somebody. One is to take an anti-inflammatory. Some of the processes involved in poor sperm quality involve inflammation or abnormal inflammation. That's not something that you would necessarily be able to feel in terms of a swollen testicle, but it happens that in the process of sperm maturation and sperm turnover that occurs. And I would say this affects less than 50% of people. So it's one of those things that when studies are done, they're not designed to identify a minority of individuals in the target population that would be helped. And that's always an issue. But so I encourage patients to take ibuprofen, 200 milligrams twice a day, and also vitamin E, 400 international units twice a day. And there are a variety of different sperm health supplements you'll see. And if you put in a search for it on the internet, there are just hundreds of them.
Yes, I can imagine.
And the one that I recommend is Proxeed, Proxeed.com. And what I tell people is just look at it, because they're probably the most expensive, but they're the most rigorous in terms of being up to date with the subtle changes that occur. And there's always about 6 articles coming out every month on, well, this looks like it's potentially helping, or that's not helping. And their week studies, and I think many to a great part is because they don't help the majority of people. But if you're somebody who wants to take supplements and there's the potential chance you can be helped, then I would go with what Proxseed has. Or you can look at the ingredients of Proxseed and find a company that makes a supplement that mimics it. And there's many of them out there that do that. That's their entire business model, is to mimic what Proxseed has in it.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of people who specifically have Vas Reversal, you recommend the vitamin E, the Proxseed, and the first thing you mentioned was the
ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm. And then just in general, for people who are trying to optimize sperm count, you could still use Proxseed?
Oh, yeah, you can use all of these. So these are all good for general sperm health and quality. And I have people that are in treatment with me if they're open to it and don't have gastritis. The one thing, one caveat with the ibuprofen is if you have gastritis, it's a concern. And mm-hmm. Depending on your insurance coverage, there are other medications out there that are non-inflammatories that don't cause that problem that can be prescribed.
That's interesting. So actually the ibuprofen, the vitamin E, and the Proxseed can all be used also in non-post-Vas Reversal cases.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Gotcha. So in terms of issues with the pregnancy after a vasectomy reversal, like birth defects or miscarriages, are these more common?
No, they're not more common. This is a patient sometimes wonder, you know, are my swimmers going to be worse? Are my children not as going to be as smart? And these are all very important questions, but it goes back to that process of natural selection of the fittest sperm. There are millions and millions of sperm that are striving to achieve a pregnancy with that one egg there, to put that one potential egg there.
It's sobering.
And so that is not a concern.
Gotcha. And what are some important things to look at in a person if you are thinking about undergoing Vas Reversal and trying to select a surgeon? What are some questions or things you'd want to consider?
Sure. So the key issues to consider are, is a microscope being used? As I mentioned earlier, the vasectomy reversal is a microscopic procedure. In fact, that's why it appealed to me when I started studying urology, is the precision and fine touch to detail that it requires. And in order to achieve a optimal result, you need to use a microscope. So your surgeon should be comfortable using the microscope and should be a talented microscopic surgeon. Another important issue to look at is whether or not the surgeon's comfortable doing not just a vasovasostomy, but also a epididymo vasovasostomy. And when we use the word vasectomy reversal, it's a catch-all phrase. At the time of surgery, we look, and our ultimate goal is to make sure we reestablish the plumbing in a way that allows sperm to come out. And sometimes the epididymis is a structure on the back of the testicle, can get internal scar tissue that prevents the sperm duct that attaches to the testicle to carry the sperm. And so the sperm duct needs to be connected closer to the testicle. And that's a variation on the procedure that your vasectomy reversal surgeon should be comfortable doing as well.
Gotcha. So if someone is thinking about a vasectomy reversal and hasn't even visited a urologist yet, is there, should they ask maybe their general doctor for recommendation or internist, or is there another way that you recommend for people to find a urologist who would be in a good position to perform a Vas Reversal?
That's a question. You know, how do you find a good doctor? It's a golden question that a lot of patients have. I think you can do a search for people that have had a good experience on the internet. I think a primary care doctor, it's my gut feeling that they don't have a high volume of sending people to vasectomy reversal doctors. They of course have an established relationship with a urologist, but that's not necessarily who you would wind up with. Mm-hmm. So I would say that I would do a search, and these days people write about their experience so much on the internet. If you do a search for vasectomy reversal,
doctor, come visit you.
Also this is a very important and big decision, and visiting two different doctors just to be comfortable with who you're going with is not a big investment of your time or money, right, given that the total cost of what you're going to be spending and the emotional commitment involved. So I encourage patients to do that on important decisions.
So just to clarify, not all urologists perform Vas Reversal. Is that correct?
Yeah, not all do.
And then certainly not all that do perform Vas Reversals do so with the microsurgical techniques that are so important for success. So
correct. Yeah.
That is certainly very important information there to consider. Well, it's been an interesting discussion about the plumbing issues. And again, Dr. Herb Singh with Urology Austin. Again, a urologist with specialized training in field of infertility for men, microsurgery, and male reproductive endocrinology. I'd like to thank you for being with us today. And we are going to be coming back to the show next week and talking about how to help couples cope with the stress of infertility. We're going to have Valerie Granoff joining us at that time. So please do come hang out with us next Saturday on Beyond the Birds and Bees.
Talk 1370, the right choice for weekends.
KJCE Rollingwood, Austin.
KKMJ FM HD3,
Austin.
1370, the right choice.